Okay, hello everybody. Now we're going to officially start. I'm sure you're keeping well and keeping safe. Important to continue to do that. Let's not let our guards down. Of course, the economy is opening, and which is a good thing. However, it behoves us to take the full responsibility for our hygiene and our own health. So please always, always keep safe and let's follow the rules. So welcome to Tech Biz Series. Again, we continue to see familiar names on our regular Tech Biz, which we run every single Thursday at 5 o'clock. Always happy. I am always happy to have you. And I'm sure that the learnings you always learn here week after week is helping you to transform personally and also build your business. I introduce myself. You know me already. I'm Doja Ikeruche. You see me every Thursday. I'm a strategist. I'm experienced in marketing strategy, business management, growing businesses in different parts of the world. That's my experience. For me, Tech Biz is about helping you believe in possibilities and achieving your ambitions, the ambitions you have for yourself as an individual and entrepreneur, and as well the ambitions that you have for your businesses. So guys, hashtag Tech Biz, hashtag Eco-Innovation. Anytime you hear those snippets, feel free to post them on social media. By all means, please tag us should you find it great to do so. So quick housekeeping, of course, you know, you're all on mute, and the same thing with your videos. Your videos are also short. But then again, we want to continue to have conversations. So please type your questions in the chat box anytime that it occurs to you. Should you have a comment even, please feel free to type it into the chat box. Some of the questions that you raised when you registered, they will already be handled in the presentation. We will also take that. Should you want to raise it again inside the chat box. Now the presentation will be on for about 40 minutes and then we will go in there to read the questions. If you want to ask the questions verbally, of course, raise your hand and we will unmute you and you can ask your question. So it's going to be a great time with Wale Ajiboye. Always a pleasure to have a conversation with you, Wale. He's the Associate Director of West Africa in Fellows program in Acumen, and today we will be talking about bottom of the pyramid. It's a famous part that we all know because a lot of us have come from there, because a lot of us have come from humble backgrounds, which is a good thing, and it's good that of course we start to climb up the pyramid, which is what our aspirations are. But before I go on about the topic, Wale, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Doja. Happy to be here as well.
Great. And I'm sure we're all looking forward to having this conversation, hearing from you first, and then we can converse as we go along. But to really, absolutely, again, when we talk about bottom of the pyramid, sometimes we just think, oh, these people are poor. They cannot afford. Mm. And so they're unserviceable with whatever, whether product or service, they're unserviceable. Another illusion that we have, if you can go to the next slide, another illusion that we have every now and then is Lekki Ikoyi VI is Lagos, or Lagos is Nigeria, or Port Harcourt is Nigeria, or Abuja is Nigeria, right? Of course, like every other country, we have those A-class, if you can call it like that, cities. But the larger part of the population, in terms of numbers, mass market, they are not in those cities. They are in the rest of the country.
Yeah.
But everyone has the common aspiration. It is towards a better life. Of course, better life differs depending on who you ask. But it is an improvement from where you are to a step higher, right? And this picture for me is so real, is so touching. Because the gentleman has his aspiration. He is where he is, yes. There's a bigger goal, but then he's taking steps, right? Steps somehow to enhance himself economically. And it's those steps now that, Wale, you're going to guide us through to help open up our eyes to see not only the what, but how we can actually start to target this space of the economy in order to bring not only wider economic growth in the larger space, but also for our individual business, how we can grow those opportunities we can tap the opportunities and then use that as a platform for growth. So Wale, over to you.
Thank you, Georgia, for that. And thank you for also sharing that introduction. And I think that this is not a new concept, like you mentioned, but the BOP, bottom of the pyramid, has always been a conversation that, you know, a lot of people have been talking about, and it's come in different form. And I think that for you, and I'm sure you know this very well because you worked in the manufacturing space, so you've seen this happen a lot. But a lot of this concept came up a lot more when we started seeing financial inclusion became a real issue and a real conversation. But beyond that is that, where is the real market even showing up? Because when you think about entrepreneurship and we talk about, I talk to a lot of people who want to start a business, and I'm saying, you rightly pointed, Lagos, Abuja, Freetown, depending on where you're listening to, or Accra, they are not the only cities where actions happen. And they are not the only places where you find consumers. And if you look at the biggest companies, even in Nigeria, you'll be so shocked that many of them are products that are even more focused beyond just the usual suspect or the usual cities. So there's something here that we are all not, that we should all start thinking about. But I just want to go quickly to the first slide, just to share a bit of the concept of what is the inclusive business model, because really it's not really a new concept. And I'm happy that you started bringing the conversation of BOP in. So for those who don't know, inclusive business model is just a new word. And I always tell people, every time there are new ideas, new people coming up with ideas, they always find a way to create new acronym, to create new words, new phrases. So inclusive business model really, truly is not really new per se. It's just that it's just a new buzzword now. And why it's now become people are becoming more intentional, because what we have seen with the pandemic, what we're seeing in the world, is that 90% of the world is at a certain level of income. And if we continue to see people within that space as sort of like people that they are not consumers, then we are missing a lot, and we're missing a lot of opportunities. So inclusive business model essentially itself is saying, how can we apply private sector approach to providing services and goods that can serve those that you already call Doja, those we call the bottom of the pyramid, which some people will call low income earners, because there's a market there. There's a huge market there. And if you see where we're seeing the possibilities of what we're seeing around the world today, and what we're even seeing, particularly in Nigeria, 90% of our own people, in fact, the population of Nigeria at one point, I think last year, we talked about, they said about 90 million people live beyond below the poverty line, right? And if you look at that figure, instead, that's about 100 million people. But when you talk about 100 million people, we're talking about 100 million people that need access to health, access to energy, access to education, access to housing, and a couple of other things, right? And so there's a whole lot that's happening in that space. And how do you begin to think about this space when you hear these figures to say, wait, as I'm thinking about my ideas, I'm thinking about my business, I'm thinking about the connect consumers, and I'm thinking about where the market opportunities will be, rather than going to fight for a small market in everybody's going to Lekki to go and set up a food, a restaurant. In fact, if you go to Lekki, for those who know Lagos very well, from Lekki to maybe towards that Lekki or Lagos Business School, there are maybe 100 schools, 100 school owners in that place, right? It's incredible that you have 100 schools. But if you go towards the other side of Lagos, there are so many that the population actually is on the other side. And so the point is, how do you begin to look at your environment and see where the market is tilting? And how do you begin to look at the opportunities that's going on in opportunities that are coming up now? But more importantly, is that the fact that we have seen the impact of the pandemic, a lot of funders, a lot of people who are within that space, they're beginning to say, maybe there's a dynamics of capitalism has to shift a little bit. And not that capitalism has not really helped, but that's, there's a gap we're missing here, because it seems that there has to be a better way that we can create access for other people, or you can do it from an entrepreneurial mindset. And so I want to encourage all the people that are listening and to those who will watch this later to look for the book, which is why I put it at the Fortune at the Bottom of the Pyramid. There's a huge, huge information, a lot of information there. And Grameen is one of the pioneer of the financial inclusion model in the world. So there's a lot you can learn from what they go. But I would encourage you to go and read the Fortune at the Bottom of the Pyramid. At the end of this session, I'm hoping to be able to share some other data that you can also download, and EIC will be providing those access for you so you can read up more. But there are different sort of information that can help you see the critical opportunities in different sectors across the bottom of the pyramid. Could we go to the next slide, please? Come to the next slide. All right, thank you. And so what we're saying is, if you look at the inclusive business model, and if you look at where the opportunity, okay, just move back to the slide a little bit. All right, excellent. Thank you very much. So in Nigeria, we'll say that most people that they live on the BOP are people who less than $8, right, in terms of income. If you convert that to, let's say, Nigeria National Bureau of Statistics talks about if you earn 180,000 naira a year, then you are the low income earners. And if you divide 180,000 naira in a year to per day, you know, it gives you an idea the amount of money that really people have. And so people would say that most people earn maybe daily wage of, let's say, between 300 to 1,000 naira. And if you think about that, from that 1,000 naira, somebody has to feed his family. Somebody has to take transportation. Somebody needs to be able to have some basic, medication that they want to do. Somebody wants to be able to learn as well, education as well. And is it possible that you can provide some services here? Absolutely. And so part of the concept of the inclusive business model itself is to say, can we find opportunities that you can use a market approach that you can create access for those that we already know that forms 60% of the Nigerian economy, and say, can we tap into that market with our business model, with what we are doing at the moment? Because if you see where we're sliding to, even with the pandemic and the challenges that we're seeing in the country, people are, income has been eroded. With the way the FX is happening, there's a lot of companies that are struggling. You've been hearing the rumors about some of the conversation that's been even going on with ShopRite. That has a ripple effect on income of people. That also would have an implication on also other entrepreneurs. And so it is not just an idea that you're trying to say, why do I need to focus on that? The reality is that the market is already showing us that the majority of the people that we have in the country are within this rank. And your role as an entrepreneur is, how do I begin to tap into the market within this new market? And so if you look at, can you go to the next slide, please? Next slide, please. So if you look at what this is saying is that, can we then look at the low income earners and think of them as not just like a pool of people that you can just see as like that data point and say, oh, these are just low income earners in Nigeria, and begin to see them as consumers, because truly they are consumers, Doja, you know that. They are consumers. They would eat, they would do that. And I don't want to mention any brand name, but I do know that there's been a lot of organizations that at the point where, you know, some products were coming to the market, started to look at that to say, you know, what can I do in the dairy market? What can I do in the water market? And they came up with even the sachet water that we call pure water. When it first came, it was really catering to that. Can we find opportunity for those who don't have access to water and say, you know what, provide something that they can buy? Because remember, Eva and a few of those brands had bottled water. And there's no one that's serving that. And the only option were people to carry their buckets or carry their kegs to go and fetch water somewhere. And then suddenly somebody came up with the pure water idea, and it became a huge opportunity. So it's not really a new concept per se. What it's just saying is that, are there opportunities that were out there? Are we leaving money on the table? And I think we are leaving money on the table. And for entrepreneurs, particularly those who are using technology to drive a lot of innovation, you have to start thinking about, how can I develop an idea that can really help serve the biggest market? And if you look at what we're seeing for e-commerce, so I'll give an example. So you would see that in Jos, for example, we have a lot of farm produce. So we have strawberry in Jos. We have, you have fruits there. But if you look at the amount of waste that we have in Jos, it's incredible, Roger. It's incredible. Mm-hmm. Almost 70%. I recall one day I was trying to order strawberry. I went to buy strawberry in Jos. It cost me 200 naira to buy, like, 10 pieces, big, huge pieces. Mm-hmm. The same piece that I will buy in ShopRite will probably cost me 2,000 naira. That's 10 times.
For sure.
And 2,000 naira for sure, right? And I'm seeing, like, that's 10 times. And I always tell people that the problem with us is not that we have agriculture is just like the next big thing. There's a huge opportunity in how you begin to preserve, how do you increase the shelf life of product,
value chain
how do you
of agriculture. Yes.
The full value chain. That's a huge opportunity here. And so part of what entrepreneurs have to start thinking about, and because the new set of funders that are coming in, they don't want the usual idea anymore. They don't want the usual suspect. They don't want to say, even some that are saying they are fashion entrepreneurs, I want to start something. I don't want to start doing bespoke and be selling one traditional attire. They were like the one I'm wearing and selling one piece. Just imagine if you're doing boxer shorts. Just imagine and doing that in mass market. Just imagine if you're doing handkerchief. Imagine what we have seen with masks. So I'll give you an example. So when this issue of COVID started and people started talking about wearing face masks, some people that came up with their first design, they were selling for $1,000, $2,000. I have a friend who she came out with her own and it was like less than 200 naira. Mm-hmm. And she's able to provide 10,000, instantly if you wanted. And the reason for that is that our focus has always been the mass market. She has never for once said, I want to be able to start, making one attire at 100,000 naira to make more money. No, that's not the point. She's been looking at how can I serve the market that is out there that no other person is looking at. And if you look at all the people that, whether they're doing fashion, you're doing education, the challenges we're seeing today, you have seen that everyone is moving towards one particular small segment. Everyone is saying, I'm catering to the middle class. I'm catering to the rich. I'm catering to all of that. But you're leaving money on the table. Because if you look at all the other places and the people who are running the conglomerates. And so I had a very interesting conversation with one company, and he was sharing the experience of, how they came up with the idea that, if somebody earns 500 naira a day and he wants to buy something for his two children, what kind of product can it go? And he was like, a 20 naira product, a 30 naira product, a 50 naira product, he can buy that and send to his family. And I'm like, very interesting. Now, a lot of people will start to want to sell a bottle of juice for 1,000 naira, 1,200 naira in Lekki. But somebody else is thinking, how can I cater to this market where if I sell 50, I probably will sell like higher, more quantity, because they get
it's
more
a volume, numbers. It will have to be a volume market.
Yeah, it's a volume thing. And so there's a lot of possibilities. And I think the miss for everybody, for most people, Doja, is that when we see entrepreneurship, we see it as a sexy sort of idea where the stage has confused people. Because, and I say confused people, because when you see one or two people who are being celebrated and who are coming to speak on a panel and they are talking about ideas, suddenly you forget that there's more to entrepreneurship than to speak on the stage. And so most people don't even understand that there are other parts of it. There are people who you don't see on the stage who make far more money than all the people you're seeing on the stage. And so the point is, what is happening behind the scene? And that's why inclusive business model allows us to pause a little bit and reflect, because how can I create business model innovations that can serve the real population of the continent, that can serve the real population that we are seeing, and not just a few that most people are focused on? Can we move to the next slide? And I'm going to just go, and I have two case studies I'm going to share quickly. And these are different things that, different sectors that you can work in. Water, power, and I can share a bit of power. And so if you look at, let's say, some of the challenges that we've seen in power in system in Nigeria, you've seen that for a lot of people who are bringing renewable product energy into the space and bringing solar and catering solar, the initial plan, then people were just bringing generator and trying to sell generators to, for the 30 kV. But the reality is that there were many other people that were looking for some sort of who had energy deficiency, and they were looking for alternative service. So I better pass my neighbor came into the place, right? And if you recall, there were some who didn't have I better pass my neighbor, who had all these rechargeable lamp, that you just need to plug it and go and charge it. And you have all this radio that you could just plug and listen to it. He had a radio, he had a cassette player, and he had somewhere you can go and charge it. And so people were already developing different products and services for this market. It was just that most people, when they come up with ideas, what they will think about is that, you know what, I want to be on the island. I want to be in Abuja. I want to sell to my bank. I want to sell to the bankers, which is not wrong in itself, by the way. It depends on the kind of business model you're looking at. It's also not wrong for you to say, I want to cater to the luxury. I want to do luxury product. However, where I'm going to is, even for the funding that we are seeing today, the kind of patient capital that is available and the kind of terms that's available, people are beginning to say, if your product is not really solving the biggest challenges of your environment, maybe we don't want to invest in you. And so if you look at the tenets of impact investing, they say, we want to invest. We want to make sure Africa moves forward. We want to make sure that we don't have work. There's energy for all. There's health for all. There's water availability. There's housing for all. But to do that, it requires a different set of thinking. It requires a different kind of, it's a different set of business model, and requires a different type of entrepreneur that can make it happen. And the reality is that for those who are playing in this space, they are getting huge mileage, getting huge traction, and getting support from those working within the impact investing space. And so I'm going to go quickly to share two examples of two people, because I know there are quite a number of questions that people have asked, so I want to be able to address them. Well, can we go to the next slide? So I want to share two great quick examples. Next slide, please. So the first one I'm going to talk about is a young lady. I don't want to mention the company name, but she does sanitary pad for young girls. And if you look at the amount of the population of this country, and you know, population for Nigeria, for example, if you say that 60-70% of them are young population, for example, and if you look at that young population, that's about maybe almost, if you say 70%, or even if I take like 50%, that's about almost like, you're talking about 50 million, for that's example.
Multiple countries put together. Right?
Multiple countries all together. And if you just remember that not everybody will buy always. Always is like, for example, very popular that people know about. But that is really catering to the people who have some income. And if you really look at the amount of young girls who are suffering from, because of the level of poverty that we have in this space, they are not able to afford, sanitary pad. It's really high. And so she came up with this idea to say, you know what, can I have a reusable sanitary pad? Can I have this small pack that is less than the typical price, but it can be reused every time? And I've been to our factory and I've seen it work. So she has developed this sort of sanitary pad that is providing sanitary pads for young girls across Africa, by the way.
And well, what's the name of this? What's the name of this sanitary pad?
I think I would. It's called Padup. Padup. It's Padup, yeah. Okay. The name of it is called Padup. So you can Google it and they can check it out. It's called Padup. And she's had this, she's done this way in such a way that even her, she uses one. She said, I use it myself. And what she's done is that you can have buy one pack, and that pack would maybe has a few sets, but you can use it like for a whole year and you can wash it and reuse it, which is very interesting. And it's less than 1,000. And that's interesting. But because of what has happened, she's been able to provide that to multiple countries across Africa. She's in 14 countries at the moment. And guess what? When she first started, she was still operating as an enterprise, not even like a full company with 100% shareholding. Not 1 million capital, that people will say, I want to have the director. She just sole entrepreneurship, sole ownership, and just decided to I'm going to set up a business name. But she has grown from that significantly, and she's impacting about 14 countries. But you know what? The ripple effect of that, because of what has happened with COVID as well, she has also started to use the same thing to now do masks now at the moment. So the same sort of line, she's been able to provide masks. And she's using the women, young women, to also help her retail the product. So she'll give it to them, which is providing some sort of living wages for them. So those young women would also distribute those products. They will make some money from it, and they can sell to young women in different parts of the communities as well. And so she's providing low price. She's working with young women, and she's also selling to young women, within these communities. And because of that, she's been able to create huge market opportunity for herself. She is getting a lot of support and impact funding. She's won different awards. But beyond just that, she's even getting more support now because people are beginning to see that there's something that she's doing that can help push the market. And she's in 14 countries, as I said, 14 countries. And that is just one part of the people that are already doing this. Could we go to the second case? Because I also want to move to the people doing services as well. Just move to the second case study. Because you can also do the same thing that you've done with product to also services. So let's go to the second case. Right. So the second case study is a new company, not necessarily new, but they've been existing for a while as well. But this company is called Tremendoc. And Tremendoc is a simple platform. For those who are technology guys, you will understand this. It's a technology platform that allows low-income earners or anyone that needs services of medical doctors or health practitioners to access them through an app. That's simple. That's straightforward. So what they've done is to create a platform that allows doctors to provide telemedicine services to those millions of people that you know across Nigeria needs their services. And Tremendoc has been able to use that platform to create almost 16,000 consultations. And recently they just even signed a new deal with the Lagos State government. And they signed a new partnership with, I think, Ansa Mansard and Nigeria as well, which allows them to be able to have people to now have insurance, to be able to access medical services anytime, anywhere, just on your phone. Mm-hmm. And so the point is, when you think about inclusive business, it's not necessarily a saying, oh, I need to now create products that I will not get the market for. There is a market that exists for it. And how do you want to think about that? This is what I want to propose. You have to start thinking about it. One is that look at all the sectors that we have across. Like if you're very keen on water, you're keen on sanitation, you're thinking about health, you're thinking about education, and identify where majority of the people are not getting those services, because that's where it's coming from. Where are the people, where are the segments that people are not even catering to? Because at the moment, you will find that when it comes to education, we are getting a lot more private universities showing up. When it comes to education at secondary level, we're seeing more private secondary school happening, and they're doing that. But within that space, there are over 70% of children, probably in public school, who can afford a typical price of what it means to go to some schools in, let's say, in Lagos or in Abuja, in Port Harcourt. And they are hanging in limbo because they probably, you know, not that the government is not doing enough, but maybe they are not getting the services they are looking for. Particularly if you can see what has happened with the pandemic. Immediately the thing happened, suddenly what you will see is that some of the private schools moved quickly into virtual. But the people in public school, what happens to them? What happens to them? I know there has been a lot of trickle of some sort of innovation that is happening, that some people are providing some services to bridge that gap, but it's not enough. So I know, for example, I have a fellow who is in Liberia who was able to, like, she did an arrangement with one of the telcos to be able to provide phone access where they've recorded some classes and they put those classes for kids to listen on the radio through their phone. And so they are taking classes and they have a workbook that they can download that is distributed and they are still learning. So the point is, start thinking about the sectors that we have, whether education, whether in health, and saying, where is the critical mass? And when you say, where are the critical mass? Once you identify that critical mass, what technology, what resources, what tool, what model would work to make sure that it's also profitable? Because the point is, the guys who are at the bottom of the pyramid are not saying they wouldn't want to pay, but they cannot pay you upfront. So for those, for example, who are doing Think of Energy, how do you do pay as you go? You know, I want to use per day, and I want to get those things. For those who are doing education, there's a guy in Ghana, for example, they pay once, he's like paying 1 naira a day to go to school. Hmm. They pay 1 naira a day. In fact, I'll tell you a very, very interesting story, and I'm looking at our time so that I can quickly move to other questions. Now, but let me tell you about the story of this guy in Abuja, which is very interesting, a very interesting story. So it's called Hope Eden, Hope Eden. And Hope Eden is a small farm. It's a vegetable farm in Abuja. And the guy came up with an idea of, you know what, I want to think of how do I get my fruits, you know, I want to sell fruits, but I also want to make sure I get the best of employees and laborers to work with me. to make it happen. And so he wanted to set up something really fantastic. And this is how what he did. So he set up a school within his vegetable farm, which is a very fascinating story, by the way. He set up this very interesting school and said, you know what? For the farmers or the laborers that will work on his farm, in exchange for their time, in exchange for their time, their kids can go to school for free. So if you're a laborer that applies to work on his farm, he says to you, rather than you, I'm not going to pay you. You work for me 3 days a week, for example. In return, your kids can go to a school. And the school is standard, by the way. And you can check it out anytime you're in Abuja. You can go check it out. So in exchange for that, it will allow those guys to work on his farm. Two things will happen. They work on his farm. The kids will go to school for free. But they also learn farm methodology that he's teaching them that they can apply to their own farm. So that's like two way. So they are not only sending their kids to school for free, but they are exchanging their own effort, their labor for that. Now, the products of his farm, then the guy sells that premium. That's a business model, right? The product from his produce from the vegetable farm itself, he sells it for premium. And so what he has done is to say, I want to be able to create a system that allows the farmers working in the community to learn new methodology and allow their kids to go to school, right? And at the same time, I get labor for myself, right? I get to be able to get the kids to go to school because I'm interested in education, but I also am teaching the farmers new methodology that they can use. So as you think about different models, think about what are the new innovation. And part of what I'm going to do at the end of this session is, and Eko will send you those things, I'll share some links and examples of places where you can read different sets of innovation that's existing. Can I think of, and if you think of education, if you think of health, if you think of water, what are people doing across Africa and across the globe that I can learn something from them, whether in terms of the way they don't use that technology, in the way they've leveraged business model, or in the way they've also raised funding for those things, because the idea of inclusive business model itself is appealing to impact investing at the moment. And impact investors are saying, can we find businesses that is more inclusive? Can we find businesses that is solving the biggest challenges on unemployment? Can we find businesses that is helping to create access for energy, for water, for health, and education as well? And if you are able to play within this space, not only are you well positioned, but you also have market. And so how do you combine all of these realities that's happening at the same time in a way that you're not just creating another fancy technology or fancy business that is only good for some people in Lekki? And so, and just think beyond that and think of the broader population of people, whether in Gombe, in Bauchi, in Jos. And it should also interest you, you know, that a couple of the people that are even setting up companies here, they're not even setting up the businesses in Lagos. They are not. They are moving to other cities. They are intentionally moving to other cities because they are also seeing the cost of labor is different. It's much cheaper. Cost of getting rent is cheaper. And all of those things is really changing the dynamics. And if you can figure out the best way to articulate what would work for the business that you are in, then you are probably on the right path towards creating an opportunity for yourself that can get you access to funding, provide ready like the next generation of consumers for you, but also position you as one of those companies changing the narrative of Africa using their innovation to solve our biggest problem. I think I'm going to pause here, Doja, and then we can take a few questions because I still have a few questions that have been asked. Yes. Now,
well, I think those are fantastic 30 minutes. You've just broken down where the opportunity is, the kind of mindset that we require in order to be able to deliver solutions. I mean, one of the few things you said that for me, it's a wake up is impact investor. You know, you said funders are looking for ideas that are going beyond capitalism and going into eradicating poverty. And this for me says to us that if we are looking for that funding, which of course we're all looking for, no matter the business that we set up, we all have to start thinking within that direction of making impact and indeed been in the path of eradicating poverty. You talked about low cash outlay kind of services or products, right? Pay as you go, daily usage, daily pay, because within that space, there's no bulk money to drop, whether at the beginning of the term or beginning of the month, end of the month. This is wage that is earned on an hourly basis. And so the payment as well, their payments or their service paying for services or products should also happen on a daily or hourly basis, even as the case may be. But one question I would like to ask you concerning FemenDoc, and it has come up consistently in a number of our webinars, which is this space, actually, there seems to be a limited access to technology and the hardware or the infrastructure that comes along with it. How do you overcome that kind of barrier to be able to reach bottom of the pyramid with technology and still they are able to get access to it?
Yeah, thank you. And this is, there's no, I won't say that infrastructures are there or, but we are, it's evolving. Yeah, I think it's evolving. I think you have to just get creative with me. I'll give you an example. So where I work for Acumen, we have a fellowship program that allows us to work with entrepreneurs who are solving the biggest challenges that we feel will create more equity in the world. And so this fellow, when immediately COVID happened, she was just thinking about how do I get access for students to be able to learn while they're at home. Now, most of them don't have access to internet. It was difficult. But, you know, she had a conversation with telco, with one of the telcos, biggest telcos in Liberia, and they gave her zero websites, which means anyone that wants to go to our website can, without internet, can actually go there and learn. So you don't have internet, you don't have internet access, they can have done that. But beyond just that, she's actually using radio, you know. So the point is, you have to start thinking creatively in terms of what are the other sort of opportunities that you can use to navigate it. I know that in terms of, let's say, internet bandwidth, things are changing. But I think where I want to go to is, even as you're thinking of your idea, don't see it as something you want to do alone, because the reality, there are people who are ready to collaborate with you. Because I think that when I see entrepreneurs say, oh, I'm struggling, I'm not able to be able to get access to this technology, I'm not able to get these, I'm not able to do that. I recall, for example, I think one of the banks in one of the Pan-African banks in Africa had set up a fintech sort of campaign that allowed companies, organizations that had new ideas, new companies to say, bring your ideas to us, work with us, come to the acceleration program that we have, and when you succeed through it, we're able to migrate you into what we're doing. And I know for a fact there are some people that all they've even done is to come up with the technology, but they don't have the market. They may be able to come up with technology, but they don't have the market. And guess what they've done? They've gone on white labeling, which means I create the technology, I loan it to somebody else, and we do profit share. And so the point is, even if you do not have the technology or the money to be able to move the technology to the way that it becomes really great enough for others to come to you, who are the partners that can help you make that happen? And how do you become very creative to adopt other form of technology or ways to making it happen? People are cracking it. They are cracking it, but it's not easy. So I know for TremendDoc, and I don't want to mention anyone, but I know that they have an institutional investor, for example, that are supporting them. And it was intentional for them to do that. Because if you don't start thinking about the level, you can't do it alone. And if you want to think about how to move fast, and I tell people, sometimes in this space is not the idea, it's about the speed and who is validating you. I always tell them, people, when people say, oh, somebody wants to steal my idea, yes, you may have the idea, but who's validating you and how fast do you move? Because if I know that I know I can't set up a company and run it and get maybe, let's say, 10 million sort of subscribers to it, who are the people that are enablers? And there are so many examples of people that even when they came up with the idea, they own maybe a smaller portion of the percentage of the company. And then they've had those, and they've had like some other people who are institutional investors take over that. And so there are multiple layers to it. There are ways to protect yourself. But the point is that you have to think beyond just the traditional way of creating business today.
Absolutely, Wally. I hear you loud and clear. Who's validating you? How fast do you execute? And also, how well do you execute? Because the excellence of the execution makes a whole world of difference. I mean, I'd like to drop this here as well. I mean, eco-innovation, that's what we do. Commercialization for us is in our DNA. And we talk about businesses that have impact. We're talking about businesses. Absolutely. I mean, your impact needs to reach about, we should be talking millions of people. So this is not niche. This is indeed businesses that are scalable and solutions that make the right level of impact across the larger market. Now, there are some comments in the box. Someone says that synergistic collaboration is key, which is exactly reinforcing what you said, especially in times like now. Shehu Shamsuddin, you said one of the greatest challenges of engaging BOP markets is trust. BOP markets are very risk averse. What's your advice on building trust in that space?
So thank you for saying that. So I'll give an example. So I worked for a solar company before, let me not mention the company. But when we say, when we give you a product, we tell you if there's any problem with that product, return it, we'll give you back. Because we had a warranty system that said, you know, once there's a problem with the product, right, we'll return it back. And for the solar market, it was a new thing, right? And people felt if it was not going to, if the product, if once there's any failure in any product and there's a broken promise, then you're sending the wrong signal to the market. So when it comes to trust, trust is to say whatever your product is promising the people, and that comes across. It's not only a BOP problem. Once you say your product should deliver something, you must make sure you can deliver that product. And so make sure that whatever you're promising, you're able to do it. Don't promise what you can't. So if your example, you're offering a solar product that can only last for 5 hours, let them know it's 5 hours. If you're offering education to say, you know what, at the moment, we're not able to give you more than 3 hours a day, let it be so. But I know currently there are so many people who are offering some education services at 100 naira a day. They are doing that. And they'll tell you, we can only do maybe 30 minutes, but this is what we are covering. So whatever you promise, and what, make sure you deliver on that.
Yes, trust is a two-way street, absolutely. Both the supplier and the one receiving the service, trust is two-way. Encourage everyone, please feel free to type in your questions into the chat box. And as well, you can raise your hand, we'll unmute you, and so you can ask your question verbally. You know, I'd like to share my experience as well from, you know, the FMCG space when we start to talk about bottom of the pyramid. Sometimes we look at it from, we sit on our high horse and think that we understand what's going on there, right? But we have to absolutely understand the consumer. In fact, come with the right mindset. Because the mindset is not, I want to save you. You know, oh, your life is about to, you know, your life is terrible and I'm about to save you. The mindset should be right. You know, the mindset, again, what we said, we talked about eradicating poverty. We talked about making impact. So mindset should be positive, but you have to understand. You have to understand, you have to walk in their shoes. I've given the example here before. When you wanted to understand a certain segment of the market, indeed, bottom of the pyramid, but in the rural, real rural, we actually went there to live there, right? We left the city at 4 a.m. We arrived there very extremely early in the morning and went through the entire day. A batch of us went to school with the kid, what the school looked like, what the day of the child is looking like. Because if you're talking about snacks for the day, you know, normally I would say, oh no, we have a lunchbox, the child will have a lunchbox, and then the child will have the first break and the second break. That's not what's happening. That's not their reality.
Yeah.
Right? And until, and unless and until we fully understand that customer and understand the full life cycle and day cycle of the customer, then that's when we're able to deliver the kind of products and services that will work. So for me, absolutely, that would be one part that I think is important for us to know.
Thank you, Adeja. And you know, let me just quickly chip in. So in Acumen, we call it dignity. If you don't see from the point of listening to the customer and see them, giving them dignity, that they, because the point is they are a market and you can't continue to see them as trying to solve a problem. Only even when you are providing product for them, you have to still respect them. So absolutely, you have to come from the lens of design thinking, which is what you just talked about. Like, how do you understand the daily life of the people you're serving? Because some people, you can't just sit down in Lagos or sit down in Abuja or sit down on your laptop and assume that this is what they need, and then you're missing the point. Yeah.
I'm going to mute Azuka. Please feel free to ask your question. Sorry, that's not working. Okay. Let's go into the chat box now. Kenneth, what if you have an impact idea, but you don't have the technical skills required to build the technology and are also limited on funds? How do you go about it?
Kenneth, the first thing is find a co-founder. Always find a co-founder who who has the skills that you don't have. In fact, many founders are today, they are saying, if you don't have three strong members in your organization, we don't want to fund you. And so even if you're starting an idea, you have a basic concept, you could find a co-founder who is very, very strong in technology. And if you don't have that, maybe you want to find an angel investment that can help you get some money and perhaps get some technology that can help you do that. But my advice is think about finding someone who can hold you together. But that then gives you an idea. If you can find a co-founder who is very strong on technology, that would be a great combination for you to set up a proper business.
Someone spoke about investment, I think 4 or 5 webinars ago. Please go into, if you go to ecoicenter.com/webinar, you'd see that there it was about private equity and venture capital. And he said, investors don't invest in individuals. The risk is too high. They want to invest in a strong team. So you are absolutely, I'm just reinforcing what you have said about, you know, finding a team. Chizo Wisdom, could you please accept my request to unmute and ask your question?
Okay, this is a very good opportunity to clarify this. Quite an interesting presentation from the facilitator. Now, my question is this. Between the business, inclusive business model as a practice, and then the business plan, why is it that most entrepreneurs, and then of course investors and funders, put more emphasis on business plan instead of the inclusive business model? Because if the business model is not right, there is actually nothing you can do to get it right in the business plan. Why is the emphasis so much on business planning instead of the inclusive business model?
Thank you, Chizo.
So I would say that there's always that confusion about people say, oh, business plan, why do we need a business plan? They need to start on the basis of something. If you want to give someone some money, they need to show you how they want to use your money and how they're going to make the business work. And so essentially, just don't see the more. Don't. I think let's start leaving the labels and just say, maybe how do I show that if I from point one to point two to point three to point four? Because business plan is exactly that. I think we're too academic when we think about business plan. There's no idea that you start that you're not thinking about how you want to do from A to Z. You have to think about that. So see business plan as a tool that helps you see those things. Having said that, the reason you see people ask you those questions, and you can, you know, ask you questions about your business plan or business model canvas, depending on what you're using, is to be able to be sure that you have thought through all the things that you need on your journey. Because even when you have thought through all the things you want to do, it doesn't mean it's going to work that way. And an investor is keen to understand that how you're going to, what are you going to do if we grow from this point to this point? What will you do if you don't have this? And that's what you should think about. So I would say be careful how you see business plan as. It's not about 100 pages of business plan. It's more of how do I ensure that whatever money, whatever idea I have, I can execute it. So see it more as an execution plan and not too much in terms of the nomenclature that we'll put to it.
I absolutely, absolutely agree with you. Sometimes we hear those names and we think, ooh, you know, I'm going to create a 100-page document and the rest. Indeed, even the Bible says that you do build a house without counting the cost. So you have to be very clear on how you get to your destination, which is your objective. I'm still going to keep reading the questions while they are now pouring in. So permit me to do so. Do you think technology is a necessity for scaling any inclusive business model?
I would say technology has become part of our life. I don't think you can isolate technology, even from the way you interact with your own sort of like team. So even if you are doing, let's say for example, you are doing mobile money, or you are doing, you want to do transfer of products. Even simple USSD technology that you use on your phone is still a technology. So I would say that there's no way in the world today where you would offer any services at any level that you will not leverage technology, even if it's just for you to keep your record and your bookkeeping and all of that. It may be in terms of maybe how you deliver the final service. Maybe you may not need technology there, depending on what you're doing. But you would always have to think about technology as a friend to you and not necessarily something that would distract you. And so the point is, depending on the kind of business you're trying to create or the kind of product or services that you're trying to create, you will need that. So I'll give you a quick example. So if, for example, you are working with, let's say, farmers, and you want to help them increase their, preserve their food, and you all preserve their food, but you have, all you have is a warehouse. But do you know, for example, by adding solar technology to it, you can increase the shelf life. And so you've leveraged technology there, even though you have a warehouse. And so no matter what you do, technology is an advantage to you, and you must find ways to say, how do I optimize the possibility of using technology to be able to hit what I'm doing?
For everyone who's asking about the slides and the documents that Wallace will be sharing with us, it will be available on ecoicenter.com/webinar. It will be available this evening. You can download those documents and the content of this webinar as well later this evening. Someone is talking about finding a balance between sustainability of the business in terms of profit making and transport business that I do is somewhat challenging for me considering the BOP. So he's having a challenge to find a balance between the sustainability of the business, so profits, making profits, and transporting, right? And so those two now are seeming to be a challenge in order to reach the BOP.
Yeah, so and it's not only you that's having that problem. And Georgia, you know this as well. Last mile is a big problem for everyone. We did the FMC. We keep thinking about what else? How do I get my product to those places? But this is what I'll say, because the answer is not so simple unless we understand what your business really model is and be able to understand your trend and all that. But this is what I'll say. It is in itself, in some ways, certain kind of industry, and you can see for health, for example, and energy, these are industries that's heavily subsidized by some support or some sort of waiver and some sort of additional sort of resources that you can leverage. And so certain kind of, if you're thinking of inclusive business model, think about the partners that can help you enable it. So if, for example, I'm doing something, are there grants, are there partners that can help, are there tariffs that can help me minimize some of my costs? Because there are so many other layers to it. And I think that the time is short for us to go really deep on that. But what I can do to help you is to see whether I can, as I'm sharing the different example of all the other things that are doing, all the other people, what people are doing in different sectors, you can see more information about what the models that others are using, and you can learn from that.
Great. Just a quick one for Jimo. He's talking about BOP, to understand what BOP is. So it's bottom of the pyramid. So the pyramid is like a triangle, right? We know what that is. And the consideration is on the basis of income, household income bracket, or the amount of money available to the household. The ones that are at the peak are the ones that have the billions of whatever currency it is available to them. And you know that those people are few, and that's why they are narrow. But at the base of that triangle is the mass market. So that's what bottom of the pyramid means. Now, another question to ask, and now I'm going to go to the questions that were asked at the beginning, way during the registration.
Yeah.
And someone did talk about affordable professional advertising and marketing services to consumers at the bottom of the pyramid. How do you do this?
All right. So I see, how do you provide affordable professional advertising and marketing services to consumers at the bottom of the pyramid? So I'll give an example quickly so that you understand it. So because the model itself is not to say, I want to go and do billboards and do all of this, because those ones cost a lot of money. The point is, what are the channels to even reach those people in the first place? And so I'll give you a case study so you can get it. So when I was working for a solar company and we needed to get to the BOP, what we had to do was to work with the microfinance bank and MFI. Because they already have some sort of product that they were going there. And so what we did was to partner with them to say, you know what, they essentially just became the conduit to help us spread information about our product. And so at some point, it even became some of the things that we're doing with them, because we'll then supply the product to them. They will also then book, they will offer loans for those products. And microfinance bank really creates a channel for the BOP. So the point is, you don't necessarily have to start thinking of big adverts and all of those things. You could just have to start from as little as religious organization. You could have one product delivered to, let's say, the chief of a town and say, you know, this product is available. They can spread it on their own. They use word of mouth. You can spread it to the teachers. There are so many layers to it. So the point is, how do you become very creative in how you reach them? It is not in itself. If you try to say, I want to go to the traditional means of doing the same marketing, I want to do flyers, it probably won't work. But what if you work with the association? What if I work with the market women? What if I give a sample product to them? What if I let, you know, I come to their own program, I'm joining part of their program, I join the association, my team members are joining the association, they're learning from them. So you have to think a lot more deeply beyond just, I want to start doing marketing course, because by the time you're even doing that, how much are you going to make from the product you're even selling?
Very true, very true. I'd like you to take some of the questions in that list that you have. But before you do so, let me just make a quick announcement that Wale has kindly offered to have group coaching sessions with individuals who are interested to, of course, entrepreneurs, please, you have to be an entrepreneur, who are interested to have coaching session in how you can build this inclusive business model. So we are targeting, Wale, about how many people?
I think if you have like a group of five, of not more than 10 in the group, maybe clustered around the sector so that we can narrow zone in. So if you are working in education, what are the models that you want to think about? If you can cluster maybe like five different sectors, and once we have those groups booked, then I can work with them. I can work with them on that. And we can set up the session for that.
Very good. Thank you so much, Wale. That's very kind of you. Many thanks. His Excellency says many thanks, Wale. Blessings from this end. So if you are interested, by all means, please, you could, drop in your email address. You could drop it to me privately. You could drop it also to any of the co-hosts. You can see them on there, Coinsola. You can drop your email to her privately as well, or Bolatito privately. By all means, please drop your email address. Well, we can see some people raising their hands. That's also another way, and we can make the selection from there. All right, Wale, please go ahead on answering questions.
Yeah, so I have a question on looking at the reality of COVID and what is happening around us. Can you adapt, inclusive? We're already doing it. And I just want to just be very clear that it's not a new concept. We're already doing it. So I'll give you an example. When you tell people to buy a product from you and pay small, that's being inclusive, because you know some people cannot afford to pay. You can pay at all. If you say people should pay at the end of the month, that you are being inclusive because you are recognizing that already. And so the point is not to say that you should start looking at your business and, you know, change everything all over again. It's to look at what are the dynamics happening within the consumer target, the target segment you're looking at. Low in income brackets, you know, like similar to what Oja talked about, that they had to go to the villages, they had to go to the school to see those realities and understand what's going on, because that then would help them. Help you to understand how to serve them. So the way to adapt yourself to this kind of opportunity is to say, wait, who are my consumers? What are their behaviors? What are their buying patterns? What is their income level? Where do they live? You know, how do they, you know, frequency of purchase? Looking at all of those parameters and then say, based on what you are able to provide to the market, what will be the best way to serve them? How do I reach them? Is it even profitable for me? What's the right pricing model? And if I'm not able to do that, are there people who offer some of additional support to my industry or my sector that can help me make this happen? And so think through the model that you currently exist in this space. Okay, it's not really a new idea, like I said. The point is, how do you become more deliberate is what I'm saying, to see this as a way to grow your business more sustainable. And not just saying, you know what, when the time comes, I'm also going to move to Lekki. I'm going to start selling product there. And so that's the point I'm trying to just shift our mindset. Because I see another question is, how do you create the mindset? The mindset that you really need to understand is that the big, and you should think about this, the biggest companies in Nigeria, the biggest company in Africa, who are they selling to? You'll be so shocked when you start thinking about these things. The biggest companies, who are they selling to? The biggest company who are really doing really well. Check who they are selling to. You'd be so shocked. that, you know, many of the products that they're selling, like the salt, like the sugar, they'd be so shocked what is happening in that space.
Very true. Extremely true. Especially when you look at a product like the seasoning, right? Seasoning cubes.
Yeah.
It's just amazing how much happens at the bottom of the pyramid. We used to have this saying in my previous place of work. We say, that means definitely just means that, you know, the money is sitting in the bush, and that's the truth.
Yeah.
Now, guys, if you can please also include your sector so that we can make the grouping very easy according to what Wale has requested for. Best to group the coaching sessions by industry so that it's easier, and actually there's even symbiotic learning amongst the group. Wale, can you take question number 5 here? We're going to end in exactly 5 minutes. So please take question number 5. That'll probably be the last question you will take.
Okay.
That's the $50 question.
Oh, $50 question. You know, so how much can, what can I start? I don't want to say that you start, you know, $50 is about almost like 20,000 naira in Nigeria now, or maybe over 20,000 naira now. But I would say it's less about, you know, what business can I start? It's what is missing in the market that you can do first. So we always think about that first, and then to say, go and start doing something. But I do know, for example, with the reality of what's going on with, let's say, with COVID, that more people are now doing more data. And so if your idea is to start doing, I want to buy data and resell, I want to buy, you know, airtime, there are so many things you can do in that. So the point is not to say, cluster yourself around a certain kind of business. What is the need first in the place? And if the need is, for example, if you want to buy airtime, then go for it. If it's a need, you want to sell data, go for it. If there's a need to say people now need, you know, education, you know, just imagine like maybe what you're even providing is as a teacher who's very good in mathematics, and he wants to teach more kids. And all you can do is that I can provide him internet access and my laptop for him to record, and I can sell. That is also a business. So I won't say cluster yourself around 20,000 naira or $50 kind of business. Say this is the only way. Why not explore what are the possibilities? Because the market is always telling you what's available.
You know, the person also mentioned that he will not be there. So that's the part that I found quite interesting. If you want to start a business and you don't want to be there physically.
Be there.
I'm sure so many entrepreneurs on this call can tell many stories of their experiences on starting a business and not being there. So, I mean, do you have an advice there?
Yeah, I don't think there's any business that you don't want to be involved in because the market is always changing anyway. So I think that you should think, you know, if you're saying you want to do a business that you know, then you're saying you want your money to work for you. And so maybe you want to put it in an investment and let it yield for you. So you want to put in mutual fund. But there's hardly any business today that you want to do and you're passionate about that you don't want to, that you won't be part of it. You will be part of it. Even if it's all you have to do is to just, you know, have an oversight function. You have someone represent, you know, you have a CEO employed and all of that. But you also want to find out what's happening at the business. So I don't think there's any business you want to do today that even if you put your money in sort of like a mutual fund, you still want to check that it's yielding something for you, right? So it's important that you think about that as well.
Thank you so much, Wale. There's so much talk about on this segment, no doubt about it. But I can also see that there's a lot of interest in the coaching that you have offered. And I really want to thank you for, you know, really you are walking the talk because you talked about impact, and I'm positive that this coaching is definitely going to make a very strong impact in the lives of our participants and in their businesses as well. Friends, we've launched a poll. Please look on your screen quickly. Please vote. We would like to have your feedback about this webinar. Feel free also to post in the chat box if you have qualitative feedback, maybe something you expected and you didn't hear, maybe how you've just been wowed, and indeed I also have been wowed, even though I've been marketing to the bottom of the pyramid for the last, you know, double-digit years, but I still continue to be wowed because there's so much to learn, and things keep changing every day, you know, and people's experiences, the stories that you share, it also not only inspires, but, you know, it just sparks a light bulb on some idea that you also can execute in order to make the right level of profitable impact also that you want to have on your business. So please, guys, waiting for the poll in another 20 seconds. We're going to close it. Would like to know what you would want to hear next. Now, let me explain a little bit about this Hear Next. Hear Next helps us to understand the direction that you want support on. We may not bring it right in the next week, simply because, of course, we have to already structure our calendar and make sure we have speakers in tow and, you know, book time and the rest of it. So it may not be exactly what will happen next week, but indeed it gives us a direction of the kinds of topics that you would have interest in. And of course, we look for the right speakers, qualitative speakers who are able to share stories, experiences, but of course, you know, make the right impact on you. All the email addresses we've seen, the hands that have been raised, thank you. We've captured those names as well. In total, there will be, I think, about 30 to 35 people. So we'll take that and we'll be reaching out to you via email. Please be patient. We'll reach out to you via email before the end of the weekend so that we can plan this properly. Anybody else who hasn't voted, we take it that you have chosen not to at this point. That's fine. So we're going to end the polling right now. Thank you so much for your feedback. We appreciate that most of you strongly agree and agree that the webinar did meet your expectations. So thank you, Wale. Thank you for all that you have shared with us and that which you will still do. I hear thank you sincerely for this session. It's so timely for my team and I. Your delivery was direct and excellent too. The very best always. Awesome. Again, get your recording at ecoicenter.com/webinar. Remember, this is brought to you by Eco Innovation Center. We do say that commercialization is in the DNA. We want to make an impact. We want to give your business market access. So feel free, please, reach out to Eco Innovation Center with whatever support that you require. Does not mean that we will meet every single request. It means that we could also act as connectors. Thank you so much. Have a lovely evening. Again, stay safe. Thank you, Wale. Thank you, everyone. And enjoy the rest.